How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Whose fucking idea was it to put Gamork in a kid's movie? The wolf?
He was scary.
Oh, dude.
That I had to leave the room anytime that scene came on.
Dude.
Still.
That scene will get you every time. Mm-hmm. And then, of course...
Rockbiter?
Rockbiter I loved.
Rockbiter is my favorite.
The horse?
Oh.
Artex?
Artex and Atreyu in the mud. Please.
And the Swamposaurus.
Please.
Did you see... I saw a meme... For Halloween, a kid was dressed up as that scene. Like, he was Atreyu and, like, holding a horse that was, like, half in the swamp.
Oh, God.
Like, they made a horse out of a wagon that was full of
Bro,
swamp.
That's awesome. Gangster. That's awesome. That kid is going to fuck when he gets older.
I heard they almost drowned the lead actor during that scene. There was, like, a lift under the water that was supposed to lower him down into the mud, and it just, like, pulled him under and almost killed him.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, like, my friend growing up, her sister looked exactly like Atreyu.
Nice.
And we would fucking roast the shit out of her. Also, like, I didn't know what even good acting was, or like Oscars, but I was like, that boy, girl, whatever it is so fucking good, right? I was like, that's good acting. Anyways, come on. We could go through it all day. That's not why we're here. We're here to do...
Unfortunately.
Just a total, like, vague recap of Never-Ending Story.
Like,
do you know what I mean? Like,
special.
Oh, remember that one part, right? And we, like, don't even know what we're talking about.
Once
no
a week,
quotes.
Every week in perpetuity, I'd listen to that show.
Yeah.
We'll
like,
call it the Never-Ending Story.
Yeah, we call it a member that part in the never ending story.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't know anyone's names. What was the, right? It'd be a lot of.
Yeah, the titty statues. Remember those?
Oh, my God, with the lasers. Oh.
I remember the titty statues.
And I get them sometimes, like you say, conflated with Princess Bride, where it's like I think they go from the laser up into Billy Crystal. Remember when Billy Crystal's like. This is fun for everyone, right? Okay, we're not doing this anymore. Just a little peek into what all of our conversations are. It's just that
Never-Ending Story and Princess Bride.
It's just like vague, like old people vague knowledge of stuff and being like, "What was their name?" Right? Yeah. Being like, "You remember that?"
Yeah, that's getting more and more common.
Oh.
Like frighteningly so.
Yeah, isn't it fun?
Yeah.
No, but we're here for Jesse Wiseman's Crime Corner. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Authorities are desperately searching for a killer accused of going on a rampage.
The search for a possible serial killer.
An urgent manhunt for a man authorities believe is behind a triple killing spree.
Police here speculating that a possible serial killer may have struck again.
I told her to get out of the car, and that's when she became afraid, and then I shot her.
Joel, everything is recording, huh?
I hope so. This time it is.
This time it is. And that doesn't make me feel too good, right? This time it is.
That's what he says every time. That's why we record two shows each week.
He goes, oh, probably. Yeah. And surprisingly, guys, we give you the best one. Do you know what I mean? We record two, we lose one, and we give you the best one. So, if that means anything to you.
The one that isn't lost that we can shove out the door before.
Sure. I gave you a case today that actually was just weird, like shown to me at the election show.
That's
on somebody's phone.
Okay.
From Austin, Tally.
Oh, okay.
At WTF. And I was like, you know, like I'm going up and down. I'm like, oh, shit. And I like read a little bit of it and was like, dang, that's fucking right up our alley, right? Sent it to you. And, you know, this is, if you look in the podcast, usually most crimes that we do, there's two or three, maybe four other crime shows that have done it. There's a million crime shows. So, yeah. Like, someone else has done it. This one, I'm going to tell you, we're the only one.
Oh, yeah. It's sweet.
We are the only one to be doing this case in full. So,
damn,
if this doesn't do
story.
It, guys.
Damn near an exclusive story. It only took, what, 32 years for it
yeah.
to get to us? Which
yeah.
isn't bad.
Not bad. It's what? A fun one, though, filled with intrigue.
Is there murder?
Yeah, maybe.
Shit.
We don't know.
Can't
right?
Get away right at the beginning.
Listen, somebody dies. We just don't know why and how, right?
Sick.
So I'm going to first set the scene, actually, of mm-hmm. our death. That's what we'll say. The scene of our death. We don't know how, right?
Scene of the crime, as
there
it were.
Is going to be, and I'm sorry, Joel, death.
Okay. I'm ready.
And I know you're surprised every week, but this week again.
I think I can handle it.
Somebody dies, right?
Maybe.
This happens at the La Concha Hotel in Key West, Florida. You know it, Joel? You spent time? Have you
yep.
spent time?
Did you go to the hotel while you were there?
I did not go to that hotel, but I just was in Key West, and it's kind of a shithole.
Were you on Duval Street?
I was on Duval Street.
Okay.
Yep, I walked down that street.
Well, then you walked past probably the La Concha
okay.
Hotel.
It must have been able to see it from anywhere in the city. It's the
yes.
tallest building in the city.
It is the okay. tallest building in the city. I'm not sure if it still is, but definitely for a very long time, it was. It was... I mean, the history of the hotel was built in the rise of tourism, like the good old days of Key West. It was one of the nicest places. It then went downhill with the stock market crash and hurricanes, and it was just like a shithole, and then was rebuilt kind of like in the same, they use pictures of the old, super old from 1926, the old hotel to like rebuild it and get an architect to like make it look exactly the same.
Sweet.
You were pointing out before the show also that it's kind of surprisingly similar to the Hotel Cecil or the Cecil Hotel. I can never
yes.
remember which one comes
so
first.
So this is a hotel that is on a lot of ghost tours. It's very haunted for a number of reasons. It was built on Indian burial ground. A,
oh, wow.
And then B, after that.
Smart.
Well, it was just a fact of life at a certain point,
well,
right?
If they would just run it by the city planner before they start stuffing bodies in the ground, we wouldn't be running into these issues all
yeah,
time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Did you talk to anybody about it?
Yeah.
Chief?
Don't think so.
Chief?
Do you want a poltergeist?
Literally, Chief? So then there was that kind of feeling around it. But then, like you said, tallest hotel... and so listen, 13 in the time of like its heyday, 13 suicides, about one every 7 years for the stretch
yeah,
of
those
the
are two very ominous numbers, 7
yes.
and 13.
And then, two deaths that were not suicide. And then Ernest Hemingway spent a lot of time
yeah.
and wrote there, partied there, so
I went to Hemingway's house when I was there. Hung out with his cats. You know about his cats?
No.
Really? Still
like
alive,
a,
huh?
Well, he was like a cat guy, and he brought his cats with him there, and they had six fingers, one of them, and it bred a lot, so there's all these six-toed cats only in Key West, and they're all related to his cat that he had when he was alive.
Dude, fuck Key West, but also...
yeah. Pretty weird.
I think I want to, like, go.
Is that just, like, a common thing in Florida for stuff to get there and then just breed uncontrollably? Because they got
I think so.
Pythons out there. They got, what is it, the lion? Like, there's so many fucking invasive species.
I think
Florida man's an invasive species.
Key West, because it's, like, this island peninsula sort of, but with swampland, fingers of swampland. So it's very surrounded, isolated, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But not quite an island in a way.
It's super clean there too. Like it was now nice when I was there.
Yeah.
People, on the other hand.
Well, it's Florida.
But look, it's Florida, and then on top of that, it's Key West. Do you know what I mean? It's an even...
Yeah.
So besides the suicides, there's a ghost of a busboy. In the 1980s, there was an unfortunate incident involving a busboy. He was in the midst of cleaning up a massive New Year's Eve party when he accidentally backed into an open elevator shaft. So, like, the elevators were super cool in that, like, it wouldn't come up to the floor. The door would open before the elevator came up to the door. Nice. And they just decided, keep that. Just keep it how it is. People are going to see, right, and not go in. So he's backing the tray in later. And so people hear him yelling for help from the shaft.
Oh, God.
That's a fun ghost that's there. The bellboys... apparition mm-hmm. Is believed that the bellboy haunts the elevator and the fifth floor hallways. There have been reports of the elevator stopping on the fifth floor with no one inside and no input from anyone else.
Yeesh.
So that's that's the same, the busboy, and this is what the bellboy does because it was from the fifth floor. Also, Ernest Hemingway's ghost, they say, is there because that was his favorite place. So he does real fun stuff like turn off lights and turn on faucets and all these things that crazy people say.
Shoot himself in the head.
Yeah, like his ghost just shoots himself in the head and real blood gets on you. It's super fun. Take the tour.
I'll go. The kids.
And then just to kind of a glowing, for me, this is a glowing review of the La Concha. For Tracy, it's a 1-star. For me, it makes me want to go, right?
Oh, shit.
Still around, so it's still there. You walked past it, right?
Yep.
So
this is a 1-star review?
Yes.
Yes.
Current from 2024.
Ooh.
McKinley Nira, if that's his real name, doubt it, is a terrible manager. Me and my girlfriend, Tracy. Picture of a girl. Oh, that can happen. Girls can be with girls, and I'm cool with it. And everybody, and it's normal.
News to me, but cool.
What do they do? Just like, scissor? Yeah.
Oh.
Okay. Me and my girlfriend drove all the way from Miami. We got to the hotel. We checked in. The moment we got to our hotel room, it reeked of marijuana.
Oh.
Ting. 5-star.
Come on.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
This hotel is very loud and is definitely a party hotel. Tracy, what's the problem? There was noise throughout the night, and overall, you just see a bunch of college students and teenagers running around. More importantly, this manager is horrific. When we told him we wanted to change our room because of the marijuana smell, he simply told us he can't do anything about it. Basically, it's in every room, bitch. Yeah. You know, what do you want me to do? You came to the La Concha circa 2024. What do you think
you're
this is?
You're in Key West.
Yeah, exactly. A, you're in Key West, and it's 2024 La Concha.
Yep.
Like, I know you were hoping for an Ernest Hemingway situation, but it's not that.
What, so instead of smelling weed, you're just going to smell gin all the time?
Yeah, think it was, like, even though it was nicely done, I think it was, like, still party and debauchery hotel. It's Key West.
Isn't Key West always that way?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like where old people go to fuck.
Tracy. Like, what? And by the way, Tracy's from Miami. Girl.
She should know better.
Girl.
Yeah.
He did not try to change our room or anything. His demeanor is very corporate. It's not friendly. It's not polite. And it's not courteous. The cafe station and water station was a complete mess with no coffee. I would definitely not stay at this place again. It's overrated and expensive. More importantly, the manager simply doesn't care. Okay? So if you like weed, okay, and like partying and stuff, don't go here, right?
Sounds like the perfect place to go.
That my favorite 1-stars are the ones that make me go, I want to go there.
Everything there sounds pretty good.
Tracy doesn't like it? I'm in. Okay. So that's kind of setting the scene, a little bit of a haunted hotel, lots of lore, party.
Haunted party house.
Haunted party house. But again, at this time that we're talking about, we're in the 90s at this point for this case.
Okay.
Still fairly nice, I think.
I would think
nice
so.
Nice as in, like, you go to party, but it's like, you know, it's a little bit more sophisticated.
Sophisticated parties. You'd black out and go home as opposed to black out and sleep in the yard.
Right.
A little bit classier.
A little bit classier. And again, this is not one of the ghosts that people see. I don't know why, but I don't know. Maybe now that people know it, they could add it to the tour.
Well, they'll start adding it to their imagined ghost sightings.
Exactly.
On Thursday, October 7th, 1992, employees of the La Concha Hotel in Key West, Florida, called the police after discovering a lifeless body of a man near the hotel. Unlike the countless other bodies littering the streets of Key West, this corpse didn't belong to a retiree or a wayward spring breaker. It was the body of a well-known local attorney named Fred Butner. From the location and condition of Fred's body, it was clear that his death was the result of a fall. Being the tallest building in Key West, the La Concha was a primo destination for those seeking a permanent solution to a temporary problem. But the note they pulled from Fred's pocket wasn't a suicide note. It was a photocopy of a letter from a woman named Susan Hanna asking Fred to meet her on the rooftop of the La Concha Hotel.
Ooh. Sloppy
very
Susan.
Sorry. Never sign a note.
Put it in writing.
Yeah, seriously. You can put it in writing, just don't sign your fucking name on it. Rookie mistake. Reading through the letter, police discovered that Susan Hanna was extorting Fred for an undisclosed amount of money. In the note, she threatened to report Butner to the IRS as well as have him disbarred if he refused to cooperate. The money in Fred's pocket indicated that he had agreed to pay the hush money. Fred's untimely death seemed to indicate that the deal had gone south.
Ooh. Uh-oh. Okay, so body.
Found a body, note in the pocket with Susan Hanna's name signed on it. Photocopy
and
note
cash,
in the
pocket. And a bunch cash. Of cash in his pocket,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, $5,000 in cash.
And a tape recorder?
And there was a tape recorder in his pocket.
So this
also.
Is all the things they're finding on this suicide.
Yeah.
Okay. Moving on. So to the tape recorder, detectives were surprised to find that it was still in working order. That is surprising. Mm. Although tape recorders, pretty indestructible, pretty right? Tough.
Built like Nokia phones back then.
Yeah. Even more surprising were the contents of the tape, which were an audio recording of the last moments of Fred's life. The recording has been made publicly available,
been
made publicly available to the Miami Herald. Released a paraphrased transcript following Fred's death. According to the Herald, the audio begins with Fred talking into the recorder, explaining that he is at the La Concha Hotel to meet with Susan Hanna. A short time later, he greets Susan, then explains that he will get her the money, but he needs more time. Fred then begins to fearfully protest and beg for his life. Suddenly, there is a sound of wind rushing by the microphone, and the last sound heard on the tape is Fred's body hitting the ground.
So he had a rolling tape recorder in his pocket that recorded the sounds of him getting thrown off the roof. This confrontation with Susan Hanna, who was allegedly extorting him out of money.
So what he did...
Is she, like, built... Like, is she a fucking stack or what?
She fucking must be.
She has to be.
Yeah.
Because, like, you do have to go over. You know, you're not just, like...
Yeah, there's not
There's
just
not
a,
an edge that you just fall. You,
know,
you have to be...
open rooftop that he's up on. There's still a railing around.
And they didn't
it.
Hear anyone else on the tape or anything like that?
No?
No other voices on the tape, just him
and he
pleading for his life and then the sound of him falling.
So he ends up... He kind of narrates his day, basically, in this tape recorder. So he's like, I'm... You know, getting the money. I'm heading to the hotel to meet Sarah, almost trying to like cover his ass. You know what I mean?
Like
I've paid her kind of thing. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. And sort of like insurance just in case she tries to come after him again.
Yes. Like I paid her. This is what she said. We're all good. So he's kind of narrating the whole day going up to that point and then talking to Susan and has it in his hand or I guess pocket maybe. The letter and recording made it obvious that police needed to find out who Susan Hanna was and why she may have been extorting an attorney. For that information, they needed to first learn who Fred Buttner himself was.
Well, let's find out.
Buttner.
I know, I kept putting in Butler. I'm like, can't find anything on the case.
I knew the name was going to come up sooner or later. I figured Joel would bring it up.
Yeah.
Hailing from Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Fred Buttner spent most of his youth being made fun of for his silly name. Thanks, Joel.
Blam. Yep. He knew it. He knew you'd bring it up right as he was saying
it. He actually brought it up the exact right part in the notes. Had the children known he was technically Fred W. Buttner III, he may not have survived childhood. His dad was Fred Buttner Jr., which indicates a Fred Buttner Sr.
Sure.
Fred graduated from Duke University before moving to Key West to begin his law career as an assistant state attorney. After getting his feet wet, he left to start his own private practice. And I think he was focusing on personal injury and like a management.
Estate and stuff. Yeah.
In Key West, Fred earned a name for himself amongst the local population. His reputation earned him a steady supply of clients, and his business grew quickly. Fred seemed to be on track to turn his law career into a future political career. He not only hosted a political show on the local radio station, he also acted as a delegate to the DNC. To many residents, he was considered the voice of the Democratic Party in Key West.
Mm. Okay. Oh, wow.
Cool.
Some of the...
real cool.
I think that's super exciting. What are you talking about?
Super exciting.
Some of the only information that I could actually find about this guy outside of the articles and documentary was clips promoting his radio show, saying who was going to be on. There was a very, very contentious race between two local politicians at the time of his death that he was interviewing them at the time.
92, we should look. What was going on in 92? What was 92, life?
What, that'd be HW in office?
Was it? Oh, the I think good so. Old days, huh?
Oh, God, fool you're me telling once. Me.
All fool in me all, once, you better not do it again. Yeah. Joel's going to look up what movies were in the box office.
Oh, yeah, what movies were in the box office,
What Nicolas Cage movie was in the box office in 1992? Raising Arizona?
The top movies in 92 are Far and Away, Candyman, A Few Good Men, The Bodyguard.
Oh. The
Bodyguard's a good one. A River Runs Through It.
Okay.
That's River Three Runs... Ninjas.
All right.
Damn, that's a good year for movies.
No kidding. Not as good as, what is it?
97.
Yeah, 97 still the best year.
Yeah, you know what? Candyman, not going to get off on a tangent. But that's
peace.
Based on a real, I know.
He just died.
That's based on a real story.
Oh. What?
Comes from like a real story that was happening in the projects back in the day. Like people coming through.
Wait, what?
People coming through mirrors in people's bathrooms because like they were just built like shit. So they could like literally take the mirrors off and like come into your house through your bathroom and fuck you up. Is there anything scarier than that? You walk into your bathroom like, yeah. So it's based on an article written about that story is Candyman, one of my favorite movies and one of the scariest motherfucking villains, right, of all time, Candyman.
Oh,
Candyman's
hell yeah.
Fucking scary.
Again, R.I.P., like he's fucking scary.
Yeah, scared the shit out of me when I was a kid. And when I found out that he was a supernatural killer, I was even more scared.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen the movie before that. I was just naturally scared of him. But did you guys know that Nightmare on Elm Street is also based on a true story? Loosely based on a true story, obviously.
What's the
people coming back from, or not people escaping Cambodia, escaping the reign of the Khmer Rouge and the genocide that was going on at the time?
What?
Some of them came to America, and there was I don't remember what years it happened, but there was a handful of people from Cambodia that were just suddenly dying in their death in their sleep. And they thought that they were having such horrible, like, vivid memories of the atrocities of the killing fields over in Cambodia that it was just killing them in their sleeps. Like, they were having nightmares so bad that it was killing them.
That's crazy.
Yeah, super crazy.
Anyways, fun
Did
stuff.
Did you guys know guys? Titanic's based on a true story, too?
Okay, all right.
What?
Apollo 13, dude.
That, too?
Fucking...
So, all in all, Fred Buttner was a well-liked, upstanding man with a bright future. The most controversial thing about him was his personal life, which involved an ever-changing cast of handsome young men.
Yes.
Fred Buttner was openly gay or semi-openly gay, about as open as you could be in the early 90s without losing
probably
your job.
Not to clients, probably not in business, but definitely
yeah.
around town, I think he's sort of known.
Yeah, not as bad as the 50s, not as good as the 2000s.
Sure.
So Fred Buttner was semi-openly gay, and this led to some locals finding out the hard way that some of their sons and brothers were gay as well. While his sex life did result in some heated exchanges with angry fathers, none of them had threatened to kill him.
Okay.
So political, local attorney, has a little bit of a reputation for corrupting the youth, as mm-hmm. they probably think at the time.
And so they said, again, in research, they said young boys, but they didn't go into... Like, I don't think it was young. I don't think it was a pedophile situation.
Yeah,
I think
nothing like that came up.
Young boys, I guess, compared to him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Police were at a loss. A gay man with no known enemies had been thrown off a roof for unknown reasons.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today's actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Had they been in the Middle East, it would have been just another Thursday.
Yeah, am I right?
What?
Okay.
Were you watching the news when you were writing
it's just,
this?
Yeah. That's,
it's just true. Just yeah, true. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's just true.
It happens over there.
Yeah. But they were in Key West.
Because he's gay, I get it.
Oh.
They throw gay people out. Okay. That's what it
yeah.
is.
Yeah. So it was like a little bit of a statement, but not. You know?
Yeah.
I don't want people to know my political opinions.
Key West right. was full of the gays when I was there. It was they were everywhere.
Exactly.
No,
again,
see, calling them
that's
the
a
gays is way
star...
more offensive than making a joke about them getting thrown off a roof.
But listen, is the place fun? I'll tell you why. It's a bunch of fucking gays there.
Yeah, a bunch of crazy
marijuana smoking gay partiers. Right?
There was a lot of incest going on when I was there too.
What?
We did multiple interviews with families that were talking about how they were fucking each other to us.
That's not
and
true.
A brother and sister made out right in front of me. They're like, yeah, our brother and sister, fuck it. And they made out to like scare me. And it worked. I was scared.
You think that any of them might possibly have been
lying? Possibly.
Almost like stepmother, stepson, fucking
they
born.
Might have been lying.
They could have been lying. It was Fantasy Fest or something, right?
They were living their fantasies.
Okay, yeah. They were lying.
Maybe.
They were. I'm just trying to like put your mind at ease. They were lying.
Okay, thank
you. And all those porns that you watch, that's not really the stepmother. Do you
what?
Know what I mean?
It's
yeah,
the real mother?
No.
It's the real mom? Nailed it.
Blam. Blam. So anyways, like Coop was saying... Had it been the Middle East, it would have been just another Thursday, but they were in Key West and they had a mystery to solve.
Yes, and now we do.
Yeah, we're gonna solve it.
Hell yeah, we are.
Susan Hanna was the obvious first choice because of like the letter and tape and all that. When it comes to suspects, two pieces of media were found on the victim with her name on them. A signed letter, and an audio recording. Although Susan's voice was never heard in the recording, Fred mentioned her by name twice before falling from the building. I wish they fucking released this recording.
Right?
Yeah, I want to
God,
hear
it. God,
it
would
I
just
hear it really
like,
bad, too.
They kind of reenacted a little bit in that Red Room.
Yeah, the Red
right?
Room episode.
But it's A lot of reenactors in that show.
Where's he from?
Florida.
From
Key West.
Oh, he's just from there.
Hmm. He's from North Carolina.
Okay, so he has an accent, kind of.
Yeah, he's probably like, you know.
A little Southern.
Yeah,
he's probably like a fun gay lawyer in Florida, right? Yeah. Hey.
Hey, stop it.
Hey,
now don't you go throwing me out this roof.
Meet me at the La Concha, will you?
Susan, swear to God, you better not throw me off this roof.
Susan Hannah. Susan Hannah, do not dare. Yeah, so like the saying her like name and full name like many times before he like, Susan Hannah, no. You know what I mean?
Now I'm just picturing both of them dressed up as like Southern plantation owners.
Yeah.
I do declare, Susan Hannah, you going to throw me off this roof?
Slapping, yeah, yeah. I think that's why he was able to be in the closet. Because it's always like
they all come across a little.
Well,
gay.
I always say like, "Are you gay or from Atlanta?" Right? I'm just from Atlanta, right?
Is that a real thing?
I'm just a Southern boy. I was raised right. You know, I like to dress well, and so you're like, "Are you?" I don't know. So we probably kind of flew under the radar that way. Mm-hmm. Susan Hannah, no, right? Says her address as he's like going. So although her voice was never heard, he said her name twice. So detectives went directly from the La Concha Hotel to the offices of Fred Butner's private practice. There, they asked employees if they knew anyone by the name of Susan Hanna. The employees informed the detectives that Susan was a former employee that had left the practice on bad terms earlier that year. A short search of the office revealed yet another interesting piece of information. Inside Fred Butner's...
Yeah.
Fred Butner's office were multiple copies of the extortion letter. Although this struck the investigators as strange, all they could do was make a note of it and keep searching for clues while Susan was tracked down for questioning.
So, Susan was pretty easy to find for police, considering she wasn't hiding at the time. The young, friendly blonde was happy to tell detectives where she had been that morning and who she had been with. It wasn't until they informed her of Fred Butner's death that she finally seemed shocked. She was even more shocked to learn that she was the primary suspect in the investigation. And that has got to be a hell of a way to start your day. Somebody comes and starts asking you questions about your former employer, like, oh yeah, so by the way, we're investigating you for their murder.
Yeah, yeah.
He was recording that? Damn it.
Yeah, exactly.
I didn't say my name on the tape, did I?
Yeah. I kept totally silent. Did you hear me? Yeah.
Susan willingly met with detectives for a formal statement, during which she denied any knowledge of Fred's death. According to her testimony, she hadn't had contact with Fred Butner since leaving her job in March of that year. Not only had she not had contact with Fred, she also had witnesses and receipts proving she had not been at the La Concha Hotel that morning.
It's always a little strange when people have like receipts ready, but
right, I never hold on to receipts for anything, which means I'm screwed if I ever need an alibi for something.
100%.
Because most of the time, most people don't know where I am or what I'm doing.
No.
And I'm not keeping evidence of what I am doing.
I actually just realized I keep all my receipts.
Like from a Circle K?
Yeah, always. But I just put them in my pocket, and then eventually when my pocket gets annoying, I throw whatever's in there away.
Yeah, that's not keeping them.
Yeah.
But that'd be long enough.
Oh, you keep them for at least
Like two, three days.
I mean, that'd be enough.
That would work.
You know, an immediate questioning. Somebody catches you 10 years from now, you're kind of fucked.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But she did have a receipt for, ironically, she had actually been seeing a friend like a block or maybe even less than a block from the hotel when Fred died. But she had a receipt from a gas station proving that she hadn't been at the hotel at the time of death. And she had alibis from witnesses that she hadn't been at the hotel all morning.
Okay.
And on top of that, the employees also said that
they didn't see her. Yeah,
none of them saw her.
That wouldn't be enough. I think they questioned the employees first. That they said they hadn't seen her, but that wouldn't be enough, right?
No,
yeah, and I think the receipt.
No, man, the good old days.
The receipt and the alibi would be enough at the time. And I'm pretty sure that they did have CCTV at the time, but I mean,
but it wasn't something that everybody had. It was like in certain, you know, government buildings or in front of. It wasn't like every single hotel
not as common
had
as it,
it, or,
as it is now. So unless Susan was dumb enough to sign her own name on an extortion letter, women, detectives were certain she wasn't the one that murdered Fred Butner. Although not the culprit, she was able to give detectives new information that put them on the trail of the real killer. Among the evidence she provided was a letter she had written to the Florida bar, which read, quote, "I am quitting the office of Fred Butner today because of his persistence in doing unethical and illegal acts.
Ooh. Oh.
I have participated in these acts until today and can no longer in good conscience continue to do so."
Was butt stuff still illegal back then?
I think sodomy might. Was sodomy? I know. To this day, I think sodomy is still illegal in the military.
In some states,
and that's the reason I'm not in there anymore.
Yeah.
He has falsified
dishonorable
records.
Discharge.
I took pills for the discharge. It's not dishonorable anymore.
Ew.
Yeah, so...
So falsified records, falsified documents, coerced clients, and has fraudulently taken trust funds. So, like a true politician, it seemed as though Fred Butner wasn't as clean-cut as everybody thought he was. This guy really was, like, geared up for a solid political career. If he hadn't died, he was in the perfect spot for it. Hmm. Like, with his legal background and the amount of time that he was spending in politics...
He was going to hold some kind of office,
yeah, he was
going to
get into
right?
some sort of office.
Yeah. The new details given to them by Susan Hanna led police to begin looking more closely at Fred's business practices. A shady deal gone wrong was a surefire way to find yourself on an express elevator to the ground floor. If detectives could get more information on the type of fraud he was committing, they could hopefully find a new lead on a suspect. While Susan was being questioned, detectives continued searching for clues at Fred's office. Among the piles of empty prescription bottles and the fast food wrappers was a hastily written note that had been crumpled up and thrown in the trash. The note read, "Stay away from James if you don't want to be exposed."
Oh.
Okay. Unlike the known note found in Fred's pocket, this note had no signature. Instead, the author had simply written, "You know who this is." Ooh, Key West intrigued. And he's like, "Oh, my God."
Well, I'm getting the vapors.
James, but I love James.
He's so handsome.
You can't keep me away from James.
You can't keep me from James. He's of age. While Fred may have known who it is, police, unfortunately, did not. So it's important to say the note that Susan wrote was to the Florida bar. So once they looked into it, he would have been disbarred and gone.
Oh, absolutely.
And he
for all
knew,
the shit that he was doing.
And he knew that she was the one that wrote it and turned him in, and she told him and she left.
Yeah.
So like he knows this shit is coming. Just saying.
Interesting.
He knows that he's on Susan's shit list.
And now whoever
James
boyfriend, dad, I don't know. Anyway.
Stepdad.
That's the part of the conversation that Joel's still stuck on.
Yeah,
and
he's like, he was fucking him, so he didn't want him to fuck him.
That shit can't leak.
Yeah, your time in Key West was different. Like, that's not, do you know what I mean?
I've been scarred. I'm scarred from it, though.
Fantasy Fest in Key West is not.
It's not normal.
That's
Key West.
Not life.
Not
yeah,
necessarily
yeah, 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 yeah.
Indicative of like, you know, Key West or Florida in general. I hope.
I don't know. We did show up 3 days before it started, on accident.
Anyways, watch Street Gonzo if you want answers to any of those questions. We're not going into it today.
If you want to see what Florida's really like,
yeah.
Detectives continued to collect evidence over the following weeks, most of which only continued to prove that Fred Butner was really bad with money. On top of skimming money from clients' trust funds, he had also borrowed thousands of dollars from his parents, but none of the evidence pointed to a killer. As far as anyone could tell, he did all of it alone. Fred wasn't running with a crew. He had gotten himself in trouble on his own. There weren't any underground mobsters pulling his strings or an angry business partner looking for revenge. Susan Hanna was the closest thing to he had to an enemy, and she had already reported him to the authorities and moved on. Financial issues are an extremely common motive in crime, both violent and nonviolent, but that doesn't work as a motive in Fred's case. Although he had allegedly been committing fraud and stealing from his clients, and I do say allegedly because he never went to court,
right?
At least as far as I know, he hadn't been caught yet. None of his victims were aware that they were being ripped off. The only people who knew Fred was screwing them over were his parents, but they weren't about to kill him for it. By all accounts, Fred Buttner's worst enemy was Fred Buttner himself. And that revelation helped Key West Police finally put all of the pieces of the puzzle together.
Ooh, oh. Joel, what do you think?
He committed suicide?
With all that shit on him?
I guess he was trying to set her up or something, or make it look, he didn't want to look bad.
Oh, so just because he's a gay guy, you think that he's going to overplan just and really go out with
his ass? Just because of your time in Key West, you just think everyone's a
gay guy?
Little gay fucking criminal.
I don't know.
When prosecuting a crime, three things must generally be proven. Means, a motive, and opportunity. What made Fred Buttner's case so confusing was the fact that these key components had been purposefully shaken up and mixed around to hide the identity of the real killer. Mm. Fred Buttner.
Yeah.
You got it, Joel.
Little butt.
You don't always
face.
Get it.
He's getting a lot better at it, though.
He Am really I? Is. Yeah. He really is. He's learning to think like outside the box.
It was only because
yeah.
no one
I mean?
Talked on the recording. That's where I was like, what?
Yeah, true.
Yeah, we're going to have to start trying harder to make the cases more confusing.
You should have just lied to me like you normally do and just say there was someone talking.
Yeah, well, I don't think we really lie in any of the cases. We'll omit information and
yeah,
release
and kind
it
of
later.
Switch things around to tell you certain parts first, but we never say, like, if you ask a question, we'll be like, we don't know, right?
Right
we don't
right.
lie to you. We don't lie to you, Joel.
Are you lying?
But we might need to start lying to you to keep you
yeah, exactly,
to keep you in the dark.
You're like
this is your fault,
to...
Joel. This is just like that divorce conversation we had the other week.
Yeah, you're starting to become like a real detective, bro.
Yeah,
gosh.
Right.
Before taking a swan dive off the La Concha, Fred had taken out life insurance policies on himself. In the event of his death, his parents would be paid roughly the same amount of money he borrowed from them. Sweet.
That is
this
from
is,
there.
It's also a cheap life insurance policy.
Yeah. From there, he had to get someone to kill him so the insurance policy would pay out, because insurance policies do not pay out for suicide. Mm-hmm. This is where Susan Hanna came in. Fred saw Susan as the reason for his downfall, and as such, she was the perfect candidate for an extortion and murder plot. Using paperwork from her time working as his secretary, Fred was able to forge Susan's signature and the extortion letter. He then photocopied the letter to make the forgery harder to detect. The crumpled note found at Fred's office was yet another part of his elaborate hoax. Oh, the James one?
Yeah.
Yeah,
of
what's
him
the
like
James
trying
shit?
To like write something or
yeah.
just put something.
Yeah,
I mean, not bad, Fred.
Honestly, overall, it's a pretty good attempt. There was
not
no
bad.
Reason to have the signature on the extortion note like that. It had to have been a red flag that
right
away right. for the police, because it's just dumb to. That's like signing a ransom letter.
But I think
not
if
smart.
He could have gotten two tape recorders, one with the gal's voice, do you know what I mean?
And played that back.
That, honestly, that
honestly, if
it's
there
really
was
close to what he
someone
did with
else
the
on the tape.
Yeah,
he should have just done a voice.
yeah. If he had done anything like that, I think it would have taken a little longer, but I don't have a lot of faith in the
Did
Key
his parents
West.
Give him money?
No.
No, man.
No, unfortunately.
Damn.
But you know what? In that situation, like what you just described, that might have been long enough for his parents to get the payout. And
then right.
they could
right.
have the
then
insurance companies
could...
in litigation until they
right.
die of old age.
Right.
What a bastard to set someone up for a murder because you're a piece of shit.
Dude, this guy is such a cocksucker.
Yeah. Anyone, huge, we had
I
one.
I mean, literally and figuratively.
We had one We had one other case where someone in their suicide or death, remember?
A member?
A member framed that
circle.
One neighbor that was fucking giving her shit or something, or owner of the house. It was the saddest one. I think it might have just been you and me. It was the saddest one ever. You cried.
I did?
Because the letter from him when he finally gets out, when they find out, and then he dies after. Anyways.
I missed a show where Joel cried.
Yeah, we've done one other, which I think is the most diabolical, crazy thing ever, that in your death, you are going to frame someone else. Like, that is a level.
Oh, that's the one where the guy went to prison and then he got out. And
yeah.
He got, but then he found out he had cancer. So he was only like with his family for like a year and then he died even though he was innocent.
But like even when he got out, the statement was just like, I don't hold that, you know, like such a like great dude.
Yeah, he was like, I'm cool with it. I get why she framed me.
I understand, you know, I like to see both sides and forgive or whatever. And then he dies. Anyways.
You don't be understanding or forgiving.
No.
It's for losers.
We learned that many times on this show.
Absolutely.
We do not forgive.
Yeah, that bitch was worse than this guy, I think.
100%. It was way was more evil. Elaborate. And I think she brought other people into it. But
it was robbing all those old people. That's what it was. Yeah.
But anyways, the diabolical nature of trying to take someone else out and like having that be your last thought is like, I'm going to get that bitch. You know what I mean? Like,
literally, before you die.
Before you die, like that.
Taking his own life out of spite?
Yeah.
That's... I mean, I'm even impressed by that. And
exactly
run
right.
On spite.
It's fucked up.
With the forged extortion letter and tape recorder, Fred went to the La Concha Hotel early in the morning on Thursday, October 7th. Once there, he walked to the 7th floor balcony where he recorded a fake interaction between himself and Susan Hanna. Forgot to do her part. He used a table to climb over the railing and jump to his death. Also, the tape recording, like... making sure it doesn't, do you know what I mean? Like that it doesn't fucking smash into a million pieces.
He had to have been
like,
holding onto it the entire way down, which also
like
that,
making sure it's it's fucking crazy. The whole
he's sitting there watching the time code and the levels on the way down.
Yeah, evil to the very end, dude.
I mean,
was
that
he
is
sober when he died.
Lord,
he like, must have been. I mean, the bar wasn't open at that time.
He was
time.
A pill guy, wasn't he? He was
God,
probably on a bunch of.
I could only imagine.
He probably
in a retirement area. That'd be the easiest way to get drugs.
What a piece of shit.
But yeah, I mean, holy shit. The dedication to the scheme is insane. All the steps that he took, like you were just talking about, going up to the hotel, doing that. He did a little bit of performance art right before he'd willingly jumped off a building, and he stayed in character. Like, I mean,
and
professional wrestlers are the only other people I can think of that can do that.
Yeah, the whole time down.
Yeah.
And
can't accidental
death. It was throughout
death.
The day, too, like narrating the day and all of that. So, like, he was... It was a long thought out thing. Some what?
Dedication. The insurance, couldn't you do accidental death or?
No, it, suicide.
Like just suicide.
You don't get
it looks
paid,
like suicide.
You
like,
don't get paid out at all if they find that it's a suicide.
Right. Yeah. So you don't have to frame someone, but you could just like get hit by a bus or like set it up where you like accidentally fell off the balcony.
Yeah,
or,
if that's really what he wanted. Right. If he really wanted his parents to get the money, he could have done that. But
yeah.
I think what he really wanted
that's...
was Susan Hanna.
That
fucking...
Yeah, that's a really good point. That was definitely one of the goals. It wasn't just getting his parents.
And
actually, that
like,
might
also...
have been the primary fucking goal.
Yeah, the goal was to fuck
his
her over.
Parents paid out.
The, yeah, exactly.
Paying the parents back was like a bonus.
Yeah.
It was just icing on the cake for him.
Yeah.
Right.
Fred Buttner's death was officially ruled a suicide. This unfortunately meant that his entire scheme was for nothing. His parents not only lost a son, they also left a hefty chunk of their retirement savings, which... one of those things I would miss more than the other.
True.
They weren't the only ones getting railroaded in the situation either. Due to Fred's attempt to frame Susan Hanna, she spent multiple weeks as the prime suspect. After the truth of her former employer's death came to light, Susan sued Buttner's estate to the tune of $2.5 million for emotional distress, slander, and libel.
Hell yeah.
Well, the court ultimately denied her claim and the case was dismissed.
Shit.
She didn't get shit.
Yeah.
I keep waiting for like a twist. I'm like, wait, it was
that's
the parents?
A twist? Oh yeah, no, that's a twist.
The parents
my gosh.
Framed them.
Well, no, you're getting too good at picking up on the cases, so it's harder for it to be a twist.
Exactly, and I think he's getting too used to the twists, right?
Yeah.
So he's like, there's got to be another twist, right? It's not just that he like framed the girl and like. you know what I mean, wrote notes about James, stay away from James and all that. Like,
I guess
the
first twist, where's the second twist?
Yeah, yeah, so yeah. 20 years later, they find out that she actually did kill him, right?
Actually, we do shit like that to him.
Yeah, true.
Yeah, no, that's true. We do like a case that has four or five twists. Yeah. For you. But thought this was a good one. I think when I first read it, the thing that stood out to me was the diabolical nature of framing someone in your suicide. I mean, absolutely insane. Again, we only did one other case like that. I'm sure there's a lot more, but like, wow, evil to the very end. And I said it in that show too, where it's like, it's almost like telling a joke and walking out of the room, like you're never gonna see. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. How do you get? Like, the only thing that you get from it is the planning, and you don't get the satisfaction
and the hope that that's the satisfaction is the hope that it pays off,
right? And that's where you get your like serenity to like kill yourself is like,
I see that though,
picturing like, it happening.
I could fuck with Coop one last time. That would help me kill myself if I knew that.
Even if you don't know? Get to see the fallout.
Yeah, because I know him well enough that I know exactly how he's going to react and what it's going to do to him. So as long as it's all set up, I'd be like, I could die happy now knowing that he's going to get fucked over and one last time.
Right. And you can picture.
I can picture
totally
it happening as
happen.
I like fall asleep, you know.
So I think that's what it was. Him falling off was like picturing her like getting arrested and fucking spending her life in jail. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's imagining
like,
it all.
Right.
Just feeling like this overwhelming sense of catharsis on the way down.
Yes.
He must have, because he stayed quiet the whole time.
Yes. Which is crazy.
Yeah.
Except for like,
I mean,
a
that
thud.
Is, it's full-blown, yeah, full-blown psychotic.
Exactly.
It's crazy.
I mean, this is an easy one, right? Gay guy.
What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. I mean, try and make it so. You know what I mean? Do I just say, you know? try and ease it in.
It's a,
you know,
it's a really, really easy transition to the outro on this one, though.
Yeah, I'm going to let you. I think I'm going to let you do it.
Do you think that he prolapsed when he hit the ground?
Oh! So true, because it was always about to come out, right?
Yeah.
So any kind of impact like that, yeah. Any kind of impact.
It's like squeezing
that.
One of those stress balls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Gross.
Great, Coop. Great.
Yeah.
Might fucking hand it over to you sometimes, right?
Let that image carry you over for the next week.
But stuff.
Butner. Prolapse Butner.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO. How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with GEICO feels just like that. Get more with GEICO.